Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this glorious Thursday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. And it's going to be perfect weather. Like the next 4 days, it is just going to be fantastic weather here in Middle Tennessee. Hope you get a chance to get out and take it in and enjoy it. Yesterday after the show, I had a conversation with a buddy of mine who used to live in Middle Tennessee and left years ago to go work for Chase's beloved Atlanta Braves. And so he's been down there working, you know, inside the walls for the Braves. And so I was talking to him. He was asking how things were going here. I was asking him how things were going there. And gosh, are you going to, you know, are you going to be working? What have you been doing? They've been doing things as normal, which has been nice to hear, actually, that, you know, office people, you know, they haven't, he said, they haven't furloughed anybody. Everybody has been just working from home, and, you know, they've been honoring everybody's paychecks and what have you. And so that was good to hear. But where I'm going with this is I said, so what's the deal? What are you hearing? And he said that, and he was very adamant about this, which did surprise me. I mean, I've got to be honest. I know Caleb Joseph came on here, and he was pretty adamant it's going to happen. But he was adamant that they are absolutely going to play this season. You know, how many games, don't know. But he said they're going to agree upon something here very soon. And the organization feels that way. They're already telling the employees that. And so I was surprised to hear that. Are you?
That things are moving as normal?
Well, for us, no, not moving as normal. For us to think that it's not going, like, they're just going to, you know, at some point, are they really going to mess this up so bad that it's not going to happen? That notion is not out there at all. Like, there is dialogue inside the organization. And I don't know if it's organizations around the league. I just happen to be talking to somebody who works for one. I didn't go call buddies that work for other organizations there. You having the same type of conversations, but they feel internally that, you know, something is about to break here very soon. And I was just really surprised to hear that.
Something, yeah, I'm a little surprised.
To break in a good way.
I'm a little surprised by that, that they're feeling that good about it. Because, I mean, when we gave our number of games yesterday, I said 48. You were what, 60?
62.
I said 60.
Yeah, and Willie said 60.
I'm in trouble in the Price is Right game, by the way. So, yeah. Darren, if it's more than 60,
yeah, right?
In
trouble.
Yeah,
61 is your only hope. 60 or 61 is your only hope.
Yeah, I mean, I was close to saying zero, but I had that thought of, you know, I mean, maybe they won't screw this up, but, and I know the commissioner was on with, I don't know if you guys saw Carl Ravitch do the interview with.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Chase. I had this conversation 3 hours before the commissioner, Rob Manfred, went on with Carl Ravitch on ESPN. This was 3 hours prior. Because I know, you know, today you're like, well, duh. I mean, the commissioner says 100%. That there will be baseball this season. But I had that conversation 3 hours prior to this interview.
Yeah. And good on Carl Ravitch. I mean, I give full props to Carl Ravitch because he did not lay off the commissioner by any means. I could tell that Rob Manfred was not happy with some of the questioning, but he can get over it. But,
good.
Yeah, I'm so skeptical right now that they're not going to figure this out. I know I said 48 games, which would say that they do in some way, but it's still, I don't feel great about it just because there's clearly some mistrust and always has been mistrust, and it's something that they need to figure out and get over, but they're not going to because both sides are equally as stubborn. And so I love hearing that there's that sense of they're going to figure it out and something's close. I hope that that's correct, but all the evidence I have, which, you know, comes from some of these great MLB insiders, tells me that they're just going to keep fighting. and they're going to screw this up.
Well, they're going to keep fighting, but I think both things are true. They're going to play. I think they're always going to play because the commissioner can impose them and basically say you're going on the field to play. But the problem is they haven't agreed. They have not come to a compromise at all. So the 50 games is what they would agree on, right, on a baseline. The problem with that is it's so far off of what it could have been. Jason Stark had a great article talking about a 50-game season. Okay, and I think most of us know this. The Washington Nationals is a well-told story. They were 19-31 after 50 games, just like the Detroit Tigers were 19-31 after 50 games. The Cardinals, who beat the Braves, sorry, Chase, in the NLDS, right? They had a 50-game stretch in May and June where they went 20-30. The Marlins during that time, who weren't very good, as we know, they went 23-28. So baseball lends itself, the way baseball is played over the long haul is where you find out who the best teams are, right? You can have a rough stretch of 20 or 25 games, a really rough stretch, but you can recover because baseball is about being, it's a marathon sport, right? It's a daily grind. That's what we love about it. So when you have an opportunity to play closer to 80 games and you end up with 50, that's not doing the sport justice, especially for right. The reasons why. And you're missing out on the opportunity of an exclusive window where you have a chance for some of these casual fans that you're desperately trying to get back in the fold. I mean, people watched the Brady and Manning and Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods thing. Nobody would watch that, right? Or that way more people watch that than ordinarily would have because we're so starved for some games, right? We want to watch games. And baseball is missing that window. So they're going to play. I've never really thought that they weren't going to play at all, but I'm just so crushed that they have not been able to see the opportunity in front of them and take advantage. And this also doesn't bode well for the game over the next 5 to 10 years.
Oh, yeah, it's going to hurt them for sure. And, I mean, it goes back, too, to our conversation yesterday that spilled over into the rundown this morning of, you know, if your team wins the championship, how do you feel? Like, do you, you know, if the Braves, the Indians, or the Mets, or the Dodgers, Marquise, won the World Series on a 48-50 game somewhere in that range season, I mean, you're okay, you're happy your team won a championship, but there's a lot missing there. And you know there's a lot missing because you know how the game works. So what I said was, I'm going to be clamoring for them to do it again next year so I feel better about it. So, I mean, that all adds in there. And this is stuff that could have been avoided. And, you know, along those lines too, Ryan said this morning that do you still feel that way if they only got 50 games in just because of the pandemic? That's the only reason, not because of the money and arguing over that stuff. And I do think that changes the answer a little bit because that's just beyond their control. Now this isn't. You know,
just about the pandemic, they would have played way more than 50 games.
Right.
You know what
but
I mean?
For, sure. But for the conversation, that's why we went there. But yeah, but that also changes. That changes your way of feeling. Like, you get that. Like, okay, a pandemic that has affected the entire world, you can't change. You can't control that. They could have controlled this. They could have been back or at least getting close to being back. I mean, they should be in training right now. And they're not because they're still arguing over money.
Yeah, it's hard to say that because there's just really no scenario that points or sign or any suggestion that they would only be playing 50 games if they weren't fighting over money, if it was just because of the pandemic. I mean, we're already watching baseball globally play, right? They're already pulling off the sport elsewhere. So it's kind of hard to make the, you know, argument that they need to come back so late that they can only play 50 games and it's only because of COVID-19. That's a tough sell for me. To me, the only way that they're in the spot that they're in, and it's even any discussion piece of below 50% of your regular season, like, to me, I thought for sure back at the early stages, it's going to be somewhere in the 80 to 100 range all along. I felt that way. and for it to be basically in half of what you're talking about, I just – it had to have been over money. Like, I just – I can't imagine any scenario where it would have been half of that and it was just simply over, you know, coronavirus.
Yeah, and that's based on what you know now. I mean, but, you know, back in March, we didn't know how long this was going to last, so –
It's funny that I did have a conversation with somebody else yesterday. I was on the phone a lot yesterday, and they said to me, we were talking about baseball, and his exact question was, so if the Indians win this, how are you going to feel about that? And I was like, well, it's funny that you said that. I actually brought that up on the show. We actually discussed that, and, you know, would I be happy? Sure. Would I have the same feelings as if they would have won in 95 or 97 or what was it 2017 or 16? That's all running together. What was the year against the Cubs? So that's 2016. Gosh, that's already been 4 years ago. 2016? No, I won't. I mean, you know, is 1948 gone because of that? Yeah, but are you telling me that I would have felt the same as the path you have to take to win it all in 95 or 97? Or, and I know you could say, well, 95 wasn't the full 162. You're right, it wasn't. But it was a lot more than what we're talking about here, a whole lot more. I mean, they started that season when, Willie, in May? Is that right?
Yeah, they played 144. They played 144. Yeah, the strike year of 81, they played 110 approximately. So okay. They don't have control of the pandemic, so it was going to be shorter, but they just, when they're playing so many less than they could be under the circumstances, it's just heartbreaking. It's crushing that they can't see the bigger picture. There's a great quote from Jim Cott in the article from Jason Stark, and it's, being right, these guys are both entrenched in winning the fight, right? Winning the negotiation. We're going to stand firm. We're going to win. We're going to show these players or the players, hey, we're going to show the owners they can't play without us. They told us on March 26th we would get prorated salaries, so we got to get it. You know, they want to be right. So Jim Cott, who has spent a lot of time in this game, if you know who Jim Cott is, he's an announcer now. He pitched forever. So we're talking about like six decades involved in the game. He said, being right is not as important as doing what's right. They're not doing what's right.
It's impossible to argue. In my opinion, it's impossible to argue that fact. Or that point.
Yeah.
And the people that love the game most, they all see that. It's very easy to see. And you see ramifications of this coming up down the road. But I don't know why they can't see it. They're so entrenched in the, well, you don't know what it's like unless you're in that room. And, you know, there's all these details that never become public and all this. Fine. But there's a lot of things that they're obviously not paying attention to either that go on in the world, right? The most important part of the game is people loving the game, people wanting to watch the game, pay money to watch the game, go out of their way to drive to Atlanta to watch a game, or drive to Cincinnati and watch a game. They need people playing the game. This pushes people away.
Yeah, and it's going to continue to push people away. I mean, I you know, back to the championship conversation, what I was going to ask you, Darren, because, and not to put salt in the wound here, but for Cubs fans, for instance, if this had been the case in 2016, you know, none of those fans had seen them win a championship until that point. You can say, you know, 1948, that's a long time. You've never seen your team win a championship, but there are some that could say that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would almost feel bad for them that's the moment, because number one, they can't be there.
Yeah.
Number two, there's the asterisk of it's a shortened season. And that's how you're living the moment of finally breaking the curse or whatever you want to call it and winning the World Series
on a 32% of the normal regular season schedule. Yeah.
And so, like, for you, for instance, if the Indians won, I mean, are you going to go buy the shirt? Would you have the shirt that says World Series champs?
I don't know.
See?
Probably not.
That's the in you know it's different for me. It's different for Willie because it's happened. I was young, but as you guys brought up, that was a shorter season because of a strike. But it just there are some things with all of this that could have been avoided if they had just worked together, and now they've made it even worse.
By the way, my buddy Matt Lodi literally just tweeted this as you were wrapping that up. Former Indians second baseman Jason Kipnis says he doesn't see a season this year in Major League Baseball. Great. Oh, I'd have to read the article, but he just tweeted that. Let's see. It's on SI.com. I guess Matt is covering the Indians for SI.com.
Well, I don't really know how
he went on ESPN 1000 in Chicago.
I don't really know how that is going to, because they can't strike, right? They have a labor agreement, so the commissioner can impose a season. That's what's so frustrating about this. They're not even talking about – they don't have to have a new collective bargaining agreement until after next season. So it's just simply coming to terms to play. Now, if he's saying because there's a lot of health reasons, I think the other leagues have pretty much proven that the concerns are not at a level to where any other league is saying we can't play, right?
No,
they're all on a track to play.
So I forgot.
So if it's over money, they can't go on strike, and the owners are not going to lock them out. The commissioner can say this is the schedule. So I don't. So that's why everybody's pretty confident in saying they're going to play. There's going to be a schedule. The problem is it's going to be about 50 games and not what it could be, which is the maximum amount you could have played.
He signed with the Cubs in the offseason, so this was on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. And his quote is, "It doesn't sound like we're going to come to an agreement because the sides are too far apart." That's what Kipnis said in this interview.
Right. So that would have it go down to where they can agree, and that is prorated salaries for 50 games. Because the money that the owners feel like they can pay would equal the prorated level at 50 games. So I don't know where Jason Kipnis is coming from on that.
If
they don't get an agreement, that will be the plan.
If they can't get an agreement, Manfred can implement a shorter season, and a lot of people are saying it could be as short as 48 games.
How ridiculous!
If
they can't agree, that's where that is the end game. A 48 to 50
game season.
And the players would be forced to play, right? That's what you're saying. That they would have to adhere to that.
They can't. I don't think they, by rule, they cannot go on strike, you know, when you're in a collective bargaining agreement. Now, they can file a grievance, and they can do a lot of stuff about taking it to court and, you know, fine.
Well, does
that
hold up things?
No. They would have to play while the grievance is heard.
Here's my cynic side. So how many would then go, yeah, I'm just not comfortable coming back. I'm just worried about it for 48 games. You know, is that worth us coming back in the health risk? Because you wonder if there would be players.
Maybe some people are comfortable not getting paid. I think, as we found with the NFL, there's quite a few guys that do want to get some income that would rather not sit out a whole year and not get paid. And then what happens when the game does come back? If your health concerns are legit, as we discussed earlier, that's one thing.
But we also know,
at a principle, you're gonna use the health thing not to come back when you're eligible to come back, and other leagues are coming back and taking the best measures they can take to keep the game as safe as possible. Then that doesn't look good upon players that do that.
Yeah, but we also know that there are not all, but some are just phony, and that's just
right.
To use your word, Darren, that's just kind of how they are. So that could certainly happen. I mean, I don't know what to believe from either side anymore. I really don't. I have I have, and you know, Ryan's listening to this conversation and text. He goes, I think in the moment we'd feel a lot more excitement about the Braves or the Reds winning than we feel right now. He may be right, but I think that's just because, yeah, it's
but
just.
We're the diehards. We're the diehards. Baseball shouldn't be worried about us, right? We're ticked off, but we're going to watch. The people that they aren't realizing are the people that either once were passionate that have lost the passion, or people that, you know, they haven't captured to begin with. There's been an erosion over a long period of time, so they can ill afford to lose another level of fans. But yeah, that's who's just going to switch. There's going to be NHL playoffs. There's going to be NBA playoffs. There's going to be football by the end of all. You know, there's going to be at least preseason football, but there's going to be football in September. There's going to be the Triple Crown is going to be going on, all the big golf tournaments. There's going to be a ton. There's going to be a flood of sporting events. Baseball is going to lose a lot of their audience.
Yeah, you and I and Darren, the diehards, we're going to be like the little kid that, you know, you make them do something and they do it, but they just let you know the whole time that they're not happy about it. Like, I'm watching. I'm not happy about it, but I'm watching. That's probably how I'm going to be.
We will come back with Ivan Maisel, who covers college football, and we will discuss a lot of things with him on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts, good read every week, will join us in the final hour of the program. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ivan Maisel is on the line with us, covers college football, host of Down and Distance podcast. You can read his work at ESPN.com, and he now joins us. Ivan, how you doing?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Let's just start with the sad, sad losses in the SEC. The conference took a hit with two legendary coaches in Pat Dye and Johnny Majors. It was tough to see that in the same week, but boy, did we go down some, you know, some memory lanes with folks on the show last week about the unbelievable work they did in the SEC.
Yeah, that was a big, I mean, if you had to think of the SEC in the 80s, I mean, those were probably the two most prominent coaches in the league after Coach Bryant died, and with very good reason. I mean, they won a lot. They became the faces of their programs, and Johnny had, you know, he's been the face of Tennessee's program for pretty much the second half of the 20th century. But that was just a reminder that, you know, times are passing.
How do you think moving forward? We're seeing, you know, we've seen the Mike Norvell story at Florida State. Dabo Swinney is having to answer a lot of questions about his assistant from an incident in 2017. How do you think this coach/coaches relationships with these student athletes moving forward is going to be? Because I think we would be very naive if we don't think things are changing for the better for the student athlete. Do you agree?
I do agree, and I think it, you know, this is going to be a case where college football is reflecting society. I think all of society is taking a long, hard look at how we view African-Americans and realizing that we've come up short. You know, there certainly has been lip service paid, but there hasn't been, you know, not enough has changed. And I'm old enough that things have changed over the course of my lifetime, but not at a very fast pace, if you think about it. And I think the smart coaches will understand that this is not personal criticism and that they won't get defensive, that they will learn from it, process it, and learn from it, and change the way they do business.
That's well said. Ivan Maisel from ESPN, great historian of the game. And you can hear that perspective as we get a chance to talk to him. Ivan, you did a piece on Reggie Bush the other day, and it really got my wheels turning, as you know, as we move forward here, as time goes by, as you know, sometimes you look at things different. And now, you know, the NCAA even seems to be getting on board with, you know, getting money for your likeness and things like that. We know a lot of the general things that got Reggie Bush in trouble about 10 years ago. And you're making a case, basically, it's time to sort of give him the Heisman back. Who's kidding who? He earned the Heisman. We know what happened, but he should get that back. Explain.
Well, you know, there's two parts of it. One is I never thought they should have taken it away in the first place. And technically, he sent it back before the Heisman Trust acted. But, you know, you could see where things were going. You know, whatever happened, whatever he was guilty of doing vis-a-vis the NCAA manual, he still had, you know, he did what he did on the field, and he didn't do it. You know, this is not a Bonds-Clemens thing where the rules he broke affected his play on the field. You know, his play on the field was, should continue to speak for itself. And, but more to this point, even if you grant the fact that, you know, okay, he should not have been recognized as the Heisman winner, the NCAA has decided that you cannot be disassociated for more than 10 years. And the university has gone along with that. So he's now no different than somebody, and this is, you know, it's probably a bad analogy, but if you think of somebody who is in prison or on probation or what have you, you know, once that is over, then they are returned to society. So now Reggie Bush is a member in good standing in the college football community. Why wouldn't they send him the Heisman back? You know, he has paid his debt to college football, you know, to just torture the analogy to the very end.
Yeah.
So why not give it back to him?
It really brings up a discussion I think we've been having for years on shows like this, Ivan, that is, you know, how do you punish the NCAA violations? Because, you know, so much has come out, documentaries on any number of situations where a player has taken advantage of opportunities, temptations to, you know, for financial gain, et cetera, while they've been playing, the extra benefits, to put it in an NCAA term. And so what's the best way to go? Retroactively punish the team, you know, the fruit from the poison tree, you use that reference in that. So it's a tricky question to try to figure out how to do it, but what's the right answer? I don't know if we know.
Well, thank you for saying that I use that, because my parents wanted me to go to law school, and I became a sports writer instead. So anytime I can do anything that sounds like I'm smart, everybody in my family's happy. It's certainly not fair to the kids who are in the program now, to the young men and women who are in the program now. But I don't think you can not punish the program. And because if you don't punish the program, then, you know, there's less incentive to follow the rules. You know, what's the penalty? Is the penalty merely financial if you don't punish them on the field or on the court? You know, and what financial penalty would be sufficient to affect behavior? You know, I don't know that answer. You know, it took years and years and years to figure out that the most effective behavior, the most effective penalty for a program was to take away scholarships. You know, they tried taking away TV appearances, but they figured out that penalized the opponent as well, and you know, was not fair. They tried taking away bowl appearances, and nobody really cared. But you affect the number of people that can dress out, then all of a sudden you have really hurt a program. And I think that will serve and has served as a deterrent. You know, you know, it's not fair to the players who are there, but NCAA now allows them to leave with no redshirt year. So I think they've done everything they can do to allow, you know, to balance the equation.
And it is fair to say that USC has paid a price for what was found out about those amazing juggernaut teams they had under Pete Carroll, right? There, you can argue that they have not been the same since. True?
They have not been the same since. They recovered much faster than most schools who endure those penalties. Somebody made the supposition to me, since I wrote that column, that not only SC, but the entire Pac-12 was penalized, and that one of the reasons that the Pac-12 has slumped in the last decade is because USC was penalized. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think that, you know, there are people out there making that case. I think the Pac-12's got, you know, their problems come from other places. It's no question, you know, the fact that USC went from 2008 to 2017 before it won another conference championship and it has only won one in 12 years is historically significant.
We're talking to Ivan Maisel from ESPN, does great work for them. Now, I enjoyed the piece that you and Bill Connolly and Mark Schlabaugh did, drafting the best seasons in college football history, but I thought it was fun because that's what we're doing these days with no live sports.
That's all we got.
But I'm curious because in round one you went 2007, and in round two you went 2005, and you know I've seen 1985, 1990, 1984 come in there. So what was the rationale with those two seasons with your first two picks?
Well, 2007 was totally, you know, me doing the panic auction purchase, you know, because Bill had the first draft pick and he said I wavered between 90 and 07 and I decided to go with 90. So I thought, oh, 07's available, and I grabbed it. And I thought, after I grabbed it, I thought, why did I grab that? But it was, you know, it was a great season because it flipped the whole sport flipped on its head. It was like a photo negative of college football. And in that season, it was a blast. You know, in that sense, it was a blast. 05 was just one of those rare years where the two best teams at the beginning of the year made it to the national championship game. And the buildup of SC and Texas that whole season was just terrific. And, you know, Texas had an early season nail biter against Ohio State. USC had the Bush push, you know, comeback against Notre Dame, and then they played one of the great games of, you know, certainly my lifetime in the Rose Bowl. Not to mention, you know, the individual performances I pointed out, like Elvis Dumervil and Tyrone Prothro. I mean, it was just a big, broad, fun year.
Well, I thought it was fun to read through and well done. But before we let you go, though, I mean, we obviously a lot of unknowns with this season and what it's going to look like. Will there be fans in the stands?
Yep.
I mean, again, these are the other things that we've been talking about for the last 3 months, but we haven't had a chance to get your opinion on it. So if you had to guess, you know, do you think the season starts on time? Do you think there will be fans? What will it look like with college football this year?
I think the season will start on time. I think there will be some fans, you know, probably about an average of 25% to 30% capacity. I think they have done just incredible work in planning and protocols for very unusual circumstances, and that the minute we have a resurgence or an entire locker room falls ill or a significant portion of a locker room falls ill, and it's all going to go to hell. And in that sense, I think it's going to be a lot more like wartime football, you know, where some schools didn't play, Some schools did play. Some schools played short schedules. Some schools played full schedules. I'm not, you know, the plans they have are good, but the unknown is still lurking out there, and I think we've got to at least expect that the unknown is going to appear again.
As we wrap this up, I remember a story you did, it was probably, I don't know, a year or two ago, about the unfortunate death of former Washington State quarterback Tyler Hilinski. It was a good piece.
Yes.
Talking about that. Where did that come from? I think you were close to the family. Is that right? I'll let you kind of set it up.
Well, I became close to the family in the course of reporting the article. Basically, Tyler Hilinski ended his life in January of 2018 as the heir apparent to the Washington State quarterback job. And in a lot of ways, his life mirrored my son's life. My son Max ended his life in February of 2015. So I had a 3-year head start on what the Hilinski family was going through. So when I reached out to them, and I waited 6 months, and I thought long and hard about how to do it, and finally just decided, if I'm going to do a story like this, I'm going to tell it through the eyes of the parents, because that's what I know, and that's the unique vantage point I can bring and try to explain to a public that doesn't want to hear about suicide and doesn't know how to respond to grieving parents. You know, this is what this life is like, and, you know, don't run away from us, reach out to us. So that's what I tried to do with that story. And in the course of that, I did become close to Mark and Kim Hilinski, and I think the work they're doing with their Hilinski's Hope Foundation is just off the charts, and hopefully helped explain to people that mental illness is a disease like other diseases. It's just it's insidious because you can't see it, but it's we need to be open about it.
Thank you for doing that, and thanks for joining us today. You continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
All right, that is Ivan Maisel. Covers college football for ESPN, ESPN.com, also a host of the podcast Down and Distance. Back to wrap up the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. Thanks to Ivan Maisel for joining us from ESPN. Elliot Freeman coming up at 1 o'clock to start the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. Blue chip ratio. Okay, I was looking at this from 24/7 Sports. Top 15 programs over the last 4 classes, and who's had more blue chip recruits than anybody else. So let's see how good you guys are as we were talking college football with Ivan Maisel. I don't think it's going to be any big secret, but who do you think is number one? Last 4 classes, blue chip recruits.
Marquise, you want to do the honors? Roll Tide?
RTR?
RTR.
Yep.
I wasn't going to go there personally, but, you know.
Is this a trick question? I mean,
no, it's not.
How could it not be Alabama? Yep.
It is Alabama. But who's number two? Who's number two? This is a bit of a surprise.
Bit of a surprise. Willie, you got one?
I'll take a shot at LSU.
That's what I was thinking, but I don't know.
LSU is in a group of they're fifth with a group.
Okay. My next guess would be Ohio State.
That's the guess I thought you guys would say. I think most people would think Ohio State. Ohio State's actually third.
Hmm.
So there's a school in between Alabama and the Ohio State.
And it's a bit of a surprise.
And you've already said LSU. They're in a group of schools in the five hole.
Clemson?
Clemson.
Clemson is in that group in the five hole with LSU.
Huh. I thought he nailed it. I thought it had to be Clemson.
Yeah. 2 and 4 are – 4 is the bigger surprise than 2, if you think about the last 4 classes. 4 is a total surprise. You'll never get 4. You're going to be like, what?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is in the grouping with LSU and Clemson. So you've nailed 3 of the 4 schools.
Okay, I'm just going to say it because of who their coach is. Michigan?
Michigan is after that group.
Okay.
After that, so they are 6th in a group
really
of 3 schools.
I didn't think they would be 2 or 4, but
Michigan is in a the next group of 3.
Okay.
At number 6.
This is because
back in the day, you would be thinking a Florida school, Florida, Florida State, Miami. But I have held back in guessing any of those 3 because of recent times.
Well, you would be wrong to do that.
I would be.
Sure, you would.
So
be.
Florida?
Florida is the final school in the LSU, Oklahoma, Clemson pod.
It's not Florida State.
No, that's it. There's no Florida State. There's no Miami.
Okay.
But I was letting you know that just exclude Florida schools would be a mistake because Florida was in that group.
I see what you're saying.
Alabama 1, Ohio State 3, LSU, Oklahoma, Clemson, Florida in a grouping at 5. You're missing 2 and 4. Michigan is in the next group of 3 schools. At number 6, there's 2 other schools with Michigan in the 6 hole.
I'm
Texas A&M.
I'm kind of stumped.
Texas A&M is in the last group with 1 other school. So they just squeeze in, and it's the top of the top 15 schools. They're the last school listed.
Is USC anywhere in this conversation?
USC is with A&M. So those were the last 2 schools in.
Okay.
And they were together. So that category is gone. USC and A&M.
Notre Dame?
Notre Dame is indeed on the list, and they are sandwiched in between the Michigan and 2 other schools list and the USC A&M list.
So we're number 2 is surprising. You said we're not going to get number 4.
You're not going to get 4. And I still can't believe you haven't gotten 2 yet.
Texas.
Why would you say Texas?
Just because everybody wants
Texas
to.
Hasn't done anything. I don't even get players drafted anymore.
Yeah, but you're talking about recruits. Like Texas, everybody fawns all over the players in Texas. I just thought maybe it's a question of not turning the recruits into good players.
Okay. Well, there you go. They are number 4.
Really?
I did not think you guys would ever say Texas.
I was staying away from them because of what
– I mean, I get it. It's fertile ground, but, I mean, when's the last time we've been talking about, you know – you're right. I guess it's more
but
about
it just shows
recruiting.
You that it's not always about, recruiting class. You got to turn those guys into good players.
Good point. So Texas is 4th. You still haven't gotten 2.
Georgia?
Finally, Georgia.
Oh, man, why did we not get Georgia? That's an easy one.
So,
no-brainer.
Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, LSU, Oklahoma, Clemson, Florida, Michigan. There's 2 more schools with Michigan. Quickly, it's Auburn and Penn State. Those were the 2 other schools with Michigan.
I thought about Penn State.
And then the school right after Notre Dame, because then Notre Dame is next, and there is a school sandwiched in between Notre Dame and USC and A&M, and it is Washington. I don't think you would have gotten that one.
No.
Yeah.
No. See, I was overthinking it because you said it was somewhat of a surprise, so I was overthinking it, and then I finally was like, Georgia. So
there you go. Those are the blue chip schools, the top 15 in the last 4 classes. Thought we'd have a little fun with that. We'll come back and have fun with Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.